Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to Fort McMurray Matters, keeping you connected to our community.
Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.
Hello and welcome to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Thomas Lukaszek, the former Deputy Premier of Alberta, joins us on the show today for a reaction to the federal budget that was announced yesterday. A little later on, we discuss some provincial political issues as well. Joining me on the phone here today, Thomas Lukaszek, the former Deputy Premier of Alberta. Thomas, how's it going here today?
Doing well. Thank you for asking.
Hey, great to have you back on the show here, Thomas. I wanted to get your initial thoughts on the federal budget.
Well, you know, budgets are like anything else. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And there will be some who will be saying, good budget, because it addresses exactly what I was looking for. And then there will be those who will be saying, no, horrible budget, because it isn't balanced. So, you know, it depends what angle you're looking at. The fact is that balancing our budget at this point in time was not a reality, unless taxes would significantly increase or programs that Canadians rely on would be significantly cut. The government managed to keep the spending, the deficit, in line to what they promised it to be. To many fiscal hawks, that will not be good enough. It is predicated on our GDP growing at the rate that it is growing right now. Perhaps I would say it's a reasonable assumption, but there is about $51 billion of new spending, and that's mostly targeted, I would say, on younger people, individuals who are in the market for new homes, individuals who have children in school, people who have kids in daycares as well. So there is a significant increase on spending on social programs targeted on the young people. What surprised me, but positively surprised me, is that there aren't really any new taxes. Everybody anticipated that there will be a big hit on corporate taxes. There is only a small increase on capital gains, which will negatively affect about 0.1% of Canadians who are the wealthiest of the wealthiest on the capital gains tax. Other than that, taxes have been held in check. So, as I said earlier, it depends how you view it. If you are looking for a spending decreases, and if you are looking for coming closer to a balanced budget, this definitely isn't a budget for you. But if you are looking for government to address some of the key issues like housing, daycare affordability, cost of diabetes medication, cost of food, and particularly food for kids, in schools, then you may be satisfied with what you see in this budget.
I wanted to ask about that tax increase for the richest 0.1% of Canadians. Do you feel that may create a trickle-down effect in the Canadian economy?
You know, this trickle-down doesn't always work, because a lot of this capital is very fluid and it moves. And if you are investing in certain commodities in Canada, you are likely to stay. But yes, there is a possibility that those who are very fluid, if they find another jurisdiction where their taxes are lower, they will simply move their investment into another jurisdiction. But the fact is that Canada is still extremely competitive when it comes to corporate taxation and when it comes to income tax. We actually have one of the lowest tax rates in G7, actually the lowest one in G7. So that is we are competitive, but there is a possibility that some wealthy individuals, you know, accountant is only one phone call away, will move their money outside of Canada. what I found to be countering that is that there is a significant investment into IT technology, into artificial intelligence technology, and into entrepreneurship and research and development. So possibly if we see any negative impact of this capital gains increase, we will see an increased investment in the job-creating sectors in technology and research and development.
Obviously, the carbon tax did not get scrapped in this budget, something a number of premiers across the country were calling for, including Alberta Premier Danielle Smith. Is this disappointing on your end?
Well, you know, we spoke about this a few weeks ago. I have no issue with carbon tax as long as there are rebates and as long as average Canadians actually receive more in rebates than they pay in carbon tax, and that is the case. Let's not forget that just about a month ago, the Premier of Saskatchewan, who was calling for elimination of the carbon tax, he had his own government cost out any other programs, any other alternatives to carbon tax, and came to the conclusion that all of them would have been more expensive and less beneficial to residents of Saskatchewan. So a carbon tax really is more of an ideological argument, and I find that many of those who argue against carbon tax, frankly, don't quite understand how carbon tax works. But it has become a mantra. It has become an ideological call. It has become a very effective political campaign tool for the official opposition. But if carbon tax was to be replaced or removed, it would have to be replaced with other measure that will bring Canada in line to our carbon emissions that are set throughout the world. So no, I don't think anybody really expected carbon tax to be eliminated. Perhaps some expected for carbon tax to even increase.
An excise tax hike coming to cigarettes and vaping products. What do you make of that?
Well, this one is interesting because Albertans, especially conservative Albertans, will have a very difficult time criticizing because Danielle Smith has just done the same thing. She increased what I call sin taxes, the taxes on cigarettes and other controlled products. So the Liberal government in Ottawa has done exactly the same thing. They increased taxes on bad habits, let's call it. Our conservative government argued that this in the long run will save dollars in healthcare, and I agree with that. And those are products that should be, if you're looking at taxing anything, those should be the first products that you tax. And Liberals have done the same thing. So I think that opponents of the Liberal government will have a difficult time arguing against this, whereas provincial conservative premiers have done exactly the same thing over the last few months.
Thomas Lukaszczyk, the former deputy premier of Alberta, joins us with more after the break here on Fort McMurray Matters.
We're back to Fort McMurray Matters.
Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.
Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. We resume our conversation with former Deputy Premier of Alberta, Thomas Lukaszczyk. $8.5 billion in new spending for housing. Do you feel that helps a growing problem in Canada?
Well, there is a shortage of inventory. There is just no doubt about it. There are more people who would, A, look for rent and look or move from a rental into ownership than there is stock in the market, and the prices are rising. So if you increase the inventory, the prices will drop. This will become an interesting political football because, as we have seen, our premier is in the process of passing a bill through the Alberta legislature where she no longer wants to allow individual municipalities like Fort McMurray with Buffalo making deals with federal government on housing spending. And she wants all those dollars to go through the Alberta provincial government, both not only on housing, but also on funding of healthcare and funding of universities that the federal government has been doing up to now. So my fear is that if we engage in this fight with Ottawa and other provinces will continue to allow their municipalities to make the deals that they always historically have made with federal government, we may be on the tail end of receiving those dollars, because as others will be drawing those dollars for the next year or two, Alberta will be busy fighting and negotiating with Ottawa how this provincial-federal relationship is going to look like. We know that municipalities like Fort McMurray, Edmonton, Calgary, most municipalities have engaged in individual negotiations with federal government. That process has worked rather well. And now injecting the province will probably create more bureaucracy, which is sort of ironic that because we have a ministry of red tape reduction, that this will actually increase the red tape. But at best, it will definitely delay us from being eligible to access those dollars, whether other provinces will be accessing them. And this is a bigger problem, because if we want to attract and retain workforce in Alberta, and if we want our young people to stay in Alberta, we need housing. And if we don't immediately tap into those dollars, but spend the next couple of years negotiating a formula by which we receive those dollars, there is a possibility that young people will simply be moving to where housing is available and affordable.
We are going to get into that Provincial Priorities Act a little later on here, Thomas. But first things first, back to the federal budget. Federal government's going to be spending more money servicing their debt than on health care this year. What do you make of that situation?
Well, you know, this is a problem long in the making. We have been running federal deficits for decades, both under conservative and under liberal governments. As a matter of fact, most Canadians don't realize, but a quick Google search will show you that some of the biggest deficits, believe it or not, were actually drawn during Prime Minister Harper's tenure in office. And this is really, it should not be a partisan issue. The fact is that we are trying to keep our taxes relatively low. As Canadians, we have an appetite for benefits. You know, every time you consider cutting a benefit, there is a group of Canadians says, sure, cut, but not this one, because this one I actually like or I actually rely on. And that creates the gap between our revenue and our spending. Now, there is government has really limited levers on which they can pull to increase revenue. You know, we can, like this government, just invest it in research and innovation and these types of vehicles. You hope they pan out, and they usually take time to actually realize actual revenue to federal government. The other one is taxes, and nobody wants taxes. So we find that no matter who is in government, and when you have, you know, these posters, ax the tax or we will balance the budget, the fact is that experience has shown, no matter whether we have federal, liberal, or conservative government, we always run deficit budgets, because there is that delta between our expectations and what we are willing to pay in taxes. And when you accumulate debt, because every year you have a deficit that becomes next year debt, you pay interest on it, and that has become part of our budget, paying debt. So the only way to really eliminate it is to bite the bullet and start foregoing on many of the federal benefits that we enjoy. And frankly, we don't even realize that we benefit from, because we have become so accustomed to, or accept the fact that there is no free lunch. And if we want to continue enjoying those benefits, we have to pay for them, and that means higher taxes. And there is no political courage, both on conservative or liberal side, to increase taxes. Hence, we have deficits.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought this up, and how it's been a longstanding problem, specifically here in Canada, with you know, the federal deficit being both a conservative-liberal issue. Do you ever see a scenario where the budget is balanced while it also remains affordable to live here? Let's be honest.
Well, I don't see us as Canadians or Albertans foregoing of any of the benefits, because let's face it, the benefits are in place because there are groups of Canadians that need them. We all rely on certain federal benefits. Then you will have this really silly political rhetoric saying, well, but we spend so much on red tape and bureaucracy, yet no matter who gets in government, quickly comes to realize that Yeah, maybe government is a little bloated, but that is really just a rounding error. That's not where the costs are. The costs are in benefits and delivering benefits to Canadians. So the other only option is to increase taxes, such as increase GST, increase corporate and income taxes, and nobody is willing to do it. So deficits have become a reality. You know, there's another way of looking at deficits. When business spends money, we call it investment. When individuals borrow money, we call it investment. But when government borrows money, we call it a loss, a spending, a deficit. If the deficit that the government generates is invested into programs that actually create revenue and grows our economy, like the investment that is being made in this budget in research and innovation and IT, then that's a good investment. You know, it is okay to borrow money to invest it into something that generates even more money. Now, the trick is to make the right investments, and always, you know, there are critics, particularly retroactively when investments don't pan out. But what is important to understand, because this argument on budgets usually is not an economic one, but it's a political, ideological one. And it is important for all of us to take a minute and take a look at history of budgets. Over the last 20 years, let's say in Canada or in Alberta, and you will find that no matter who is in government, the decisions are pretty well identical. That when there is a choice of either cutting programs or increasing taxes or running a deficit, no matter who's in government, they will choose option C, being deficits, because cutting programs and increasing taxes is something that Canadians are not willing to accept, even though we complain about deficits.
Thomas, we haven't really had much time to look at this budget in great detail, but what do you feel is missing so far in this budget?
What is missing in this budget? You know, this budget is making a few assumptions. It is making an assumption that our economy will continue to grow at the rate that it is growing right now. And that is a dangerous assumption. There is very little wiggle room. If our economy slows down just a bit, our deficit will significantly increase in this particular budget. So that is one worry that I have. Second concern I have is this investment in housing, even though I think it's the right thing to do. And for the longest time, federal government, and frankly, rightfully so, was saying that housing is not a federal issue, it's a provincial issue. But since provinces were not stepping up to the plate, federal government stepped in right now. This is a big spend that federal government is putting into housing, not only in dollars, but also in making federal surplus land available for construction of housing. And I'm fearing that this will become a political football across Canada, as it has already become in the province of Alberta. Because, again, you have this sort of duplicity or hypocrisy where provinces keep telling federal government, stay out of our jurisdiction, but give us the money. But then when federal government starts giving money and attaches certain strings to it, there is a pushback. So I'm worried that the dollars that are being allocated towards housing may not actually end up where we need them, in housing, but we will be looking at the next 10 years of political arguing between provinces like Saskatchewan, Alberta, Ontario, and federal government on how the money should be spent, as opposed to spending it and creating affordable housing.
Do you feel this budget triggers an election?
Well, that's interesting. The leader of the second opposition, NDP, Jagmeet Singh, came out and you know, he took a lot of credit for this budget for certain areas, particularly in housing, but he's not fully satisfied. The Liberal government right now has an agreement on supply and confidence. The only time election will be triggered if Jagmeet Singh does not support this budget. Judging by his rhetoric right after the budget speech, it looks like he will posture a little, but ultimately support this budget. I think majority of Canadians, you know, your average hardworking families, will support this budget, because there actually is a lot in this budget for working Albertans, Canadians with children, renters, people who are looking at buying a new house, people who experience medical conditions, seniors who need dental work. There is a lot in that budget. I think the biggest criticism will come from our business elites, and not mid-sized and small businesses, but the wealthiest of the wealthy, who will be saying that this budget will cause them to pull their investment out of Canada and move elsewhere. This is a bluff that the Prime Minister will have to take. Whether it is a bluff or not, we will see.
We'll be back with more next on Fort McMurray Matters.
We're back to Fort McMurray Matters.
Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.
And we're back on Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Thomas Lukaszek, the former Deputy Premier of Alberta, joins us once again on the phone. Switching gears a bit here, Thomas, what are your thoughts on Premier Danielle Smith now wanting to vet any and all research grant funding from Ottawa, specifically to Alberta universities?
Well, you know, I was the Advanced Education Minister, and I have to tell you that I am very concerned, because much like our court system, judges have to be independent. Our academia and our universities have to be independent. They cannot do research and come up with studies simply to pander to the government of the day. You know, you wouldn't want researchers all of a sudden coming up with some left-leaning conclusions just because NDP is in power, and then some ultra-right-leaning because UCP is in power. The universities are there to provide us the truth. Whatever it is, whether we like it or not, this is science, this is data, this is the information. And that's what has been happening up to now. There are councils in place that take federal dollars, and they allot those dollars to universities for research. There is ethics attached to research. There is a methodology that makes sure that the research is objective. That is in place. And funding of research is removed from the political partisan posturing of whoever is in government. Danielle Smith says, I don't want that anymore. She says, give me all the federal dollars that you have been giving in this arm's length away, objective way to universities, and I will determine, my cabinet will determine what our government agenda is and what kind of research we want to finance. So I imagine if somebody wanted to research, for example, something to do with environment, then she would say no. But if somebody wants to research something to do with oil and gas industry, she would say yes. And that could never happen. So this could be the beginning of the end of Alberta universities being considered as world-class universities. And this could be the beginning of the end of researchers out there in the world even taking into consideration anything that comes out of our universities. And also, we attract many bright researchers and students into our post-secondary institutions, who would want to go to a university that is politically funded? You know, that's why foreign students don't go to Russia and China and Hungary, because those universities are simply apparatuses of the government. They're mouthpieces of the government. We have always enjoyed incredible standing throughout the world because we have very, very high caliber research by very objective researchers, which often we disagree with, but that's fine because that's what the facts are. We are looking at this being politicized right now, and that is very dangerous.
This whole Provincial Priorities Act, what do you make of it? I mean, to me, it really seems like more red tape coming from a government that alleges they want to reduce red tape.
Well, you know, this is the irony, and I really can't square that circle, because we now have a minister of red tape reduction, and we are introducing a whole new layer of government that will now negotiate and distribute funds between Ottawa that normally has been flying directly into universities and into other post-secondary institutions and into municipalities. And now Danielle Smith is saying, stop. It has to go through the province. We have to vet it. We have to approve it. And that's when the municipality will be getting money. It could be as silly as, for example, our municipalities file for grants every year for Canada Day celebrations. And Ottawa sends them a check for $10,000 for fireworks or what it is. Well, they won't be able to do that anymore. They will have to apply to the province. The province will determine whether it meets their objectives. And if it does, then the money will flow from Ottawa to the province, from the province to the municipality. So that is a small, silly example. But the big ones, the meaningful ones, actually are in areas of public transportation, of road repairs, of repairing of water treatment facilities, or affordable housing. You know, our municipalities, we elect city councilors and mayors to make decisions. They're capable. And historically, they have been negotiating good grants, and they have been applying for grants, and they've been benefiting us. I don't understand why suddenly we believe that these mayors and city councilors are incompetent, and they need some kind of a father or mother overlooking them and deciding what is and isn't good for them, and why the money has to go through the provincial government. Well, I'll tell you what the politics is, because first of all, again, just like with funding of universities, provincial government wants to put a political spin and fund things that align with their ideology and not others. But also they want to be the one handing out the check. They want to be cutting the ribbons. They want to be announcing funding for new buses, new roads, new water treatment plants, and not allow Ottawa to be seen as doing anything good for Alberta municipalities, because now the money will flow through the province and it will be the province announcing and giving the money out. It was very silly, sounds almost childish, but that's what it's really all about. There is this desire to make sure that no matter what Ottawa does, it is not perceived in a positive way and is not seen as a order of government that does anything good for our municipalities, universities, or healthcare system.
Five candidates for the NDP Alberta leadership. Who do you like best?
You know, I the one I like best decided to step away, and that was Racky Pancholi. I think she had the potential creating a new NDP, and I thought she appealed to most Albertans, sort of checked off most boxes. Now I am not rooting for anybody, but looking at the numbers, I think there is a very high possibility that Mr. Nahed Nenshi will take it, and he will take it in the first ballot. If he doesn't take it in the first ballot, becomes a crapshoot, because all the remaining candidates, the remaining four, may coalesce and gang up against him, and then we may end up with a runner-up becoming a premier, much like Stelmach became a premier, Redford became a premier by simply being a runner-up against a favorite. But in this case, looking at the membership sale numbers, I think Mr. Nenshi stands a really good chance of winning this on a first ballot.
Yeah, he's definitely a big name on the list. He used to be one of the more popular mayors in all of Canada. Is that the star power the NDP needs to find their way back into power?
Well, you know, he's well-liked. He really is well-liked. He's very intelligent. He knows how to do politics. He has shown great leadership in Calgary during his mayorship. He was a three-term mayor. And during some very challenging times in Calgary during the flood. So he definitely has the credentials to be a good leader of opposition and then premier. Municipal politics is very different from provincial politics, so we'll see how it translates. But I can tell you one thing: if Danielle Smith is worried about anyone, she's definitely worried about Mr. Nenshi, because he has a lot of appeal in Calgary. The city of Edmonton will learn to like him shortly. And maybe even some of the larger cities in Alberta, particularly during a time when the provincial government is telling them, you're incompetent, you cannot negotiate your agreements like you have for over 100 years, and now the province will be telling you how you run your cities. Well, Mr. Nenshi won't stand for that. Being a mayor of a large city, I think he has a lot of appreciation for the importance of municipalities and decision making on a local level by municipalities, and he will understand that Fort McMurray doesn't want someone under the dome in Alberta legislature telling them what is good and what isn't good for them.
Thomas Lukaszczyk, the former Deputy Premier of Alberta. Good as always to get you on the show. We'll get you again on sometime soon. Thank you so much for the time.
Much appreciated. Thank you to all of you. Thank you.
That was our show for today. A big thank you to Thomas Lukaszczyk, the former Deputy Premier of Alberta, for joining us on the show today. We have another full show planned for you tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm Ryan McNally. Have a good day.
That's the end of another edition of Fort McMurray Matters.
Want a copy of this or any past episodes? Download the podcast at play1037.ca. Brought to you by Cooper & Company Law Firm and Fort McMurray Orthodontics.
On Play 103.